Long ago, it was forecast that at this time in history, extraordinary teachers, including the world teacher, would emerge to help us as we build a world that works for everyone.
Today, Planetary Makeover is sharing with you one of the multimedia presentations that esotericist Cielito Pasquale made to the Seattle Theosophical Society.
Welcome, everyone. We've got a nice group here at the Theosophical Society here in Seattle. My name is Cielito Pasquale. I want to thank Athena Henning here at the Seattle Theosophical Society for arranging to have this talk, the space and time available for this talk. And it will be archived on the YouTube page of the Seattle Theosophical Society. I have another talk there on transmission meditation. So it was recorded around April. So if you're interested in a service meditation for humanity, that's definitely a video to watch. And for those of you who've not been to the Seattle Theosophical Library, where we are broadcasting from, it's a beautiful space. It's a wonderful space to meet and gather and discuss. We were just having a discussion about, does consciousness exist outside of the brain? And I had to jump in because that conversation was moving right along. And I said, wait, I'm giving a talk. So lots of interesting things to explore here. So if you've not been to the library here on Capitol Hill, I suggest you come by. And I also want to acknowledge that this talk is, this library is situated on land that for thousands of years was stewarded by the Duwamish people and their ancestors. And their enduring traditions of sharing and community are reminders for us of humanity's true role as stewards of our beautiful planet. So today we're going to consider the question, are modern day miracles signs of a coming renaissance? What do I mean by miracles? I would define miracles as events that, in a clear way, appear to defy the laws of the known and leave the subject feeling connected to a consciousness greater than themselves. And what do I mean by a coming renaissance? I mean an imminent transformation of humanity. Now, I realize the notion that I'm proposing sounds incredibly grandiose, but considering the entirety of the story I'm about to share, it's really immaterial to be concerned with hyperbole in the title of the talk, because the story I will share is strange. As I said, my name is Cielito Pasquale. I'm an ordinary person sharing an extraordinary story that I first heard 35 years ago. And my purpose in taking the time to do this is to create a climate of hope and expectancy. The information I'm sharing today is not presented as dogma, nor am I here to convince you of anything. I personally have a strong conviction about miracles and the story behind miracles. I grew up hearing stories of miracles from my mother, who survived the Japanese occupation of the Philippines during World War II. And I want to acknowledge my mother. She's listening. Hi, Mom. Thanks for the inspiration. I'm convinced miracles are extraordinary signposts for a new time that is now upon us, a time of extraordinary possibility. And I am one of hundreds of people around the world who work to share this very hopeful message in simple settings such as this. It's an independent grassroots effort emerging from an informal network of volunteers, collectively known as Share International. And out of this modest effort, the story I'm about to share today has reached millions of people around the world. So when I first heard this story, I was asked to listen with an open mind. And so I extend that request to you as well. However, the mind being what it is, this is often more difficult than we imagine. When we hear something new and unfamiliar, The mind typically wants to either accept it or reject it immediately based on what the mind already knows, which is based in the past. So I invite you to set aside the habit of the mind that wants to do that. And just for the next hour or so afterwards, you will know at the right time if and how to respond to what you hear today. If you leave this talk with a greater sense of hope for the future of humanity, then I will have done my job. So let's talk about miracles. In this exploration on miracles, I'll be presenting a perspective from a body of wisdom called the Ageless Wisdom Teaching. It's a wellspring of knowledge handed down generation after generation since ancient times. In this talk, I'm not promoting any particular religion. However, miracles, as they're popularly known, very often occur in a religious context. There are also many miracles that occur outside of any religious context. Throughout this talk, you're going to hear recordings of three people relating just such an experience of, which I call miracle encounters. Now, one approach that can help us understand miracles is through an awareness of three momentous events unfolding in the world right now, which I'm convinced underlie the whole range of miracle phenomena in the world. The first event has been taking place for a few hundred years, and the impact of this event is resulting in the turmoil and division we see in the world today. Those of you who are members of the Theosophical Society or studying the esoteric teachings are likely familiar with the fact that we have come out of the age of Pisces and we are now in the age of Aquarius. We are in a tremendous transition. And this event is really a scientific fact. You go to any observatory in the world, any astronomer there will know that to be true, that our solar system moves in relationship, moves through the heavens around the sun in relationship to one or another of the signs of the zodiac. The name of that sign confers the name of the age, which lasts roughly 2000 to 2500 years. What astronomers do not yet recognize, which is known by the esoteric scientist, is that every age is characterized by an inflow of energies that impact all life on our planet. Specifically, these energies impel the evolution of consciousness of the human family and shape civilizations. In this talk, I'll mention energies a lot. Now, the upheaval we are seeing in our world is the impact of these Aquarian energies, the energies of unity and synthesis on Piscean institutions and mindsets. And those Piscean institutions are expressing today as extremes of individuality, greed, and competition. Now, at the beginning of the Piscean age, these qualities, individuality, is really remarkable. Today, we each have relatively tremendous amount of what do you say, agency and choice in our lives. Whereas 2,000 years ago, we were subject to the rules of the tribe, subject to notions of superstition, and did not have the at all agency 2,000 years ago, most people. And so the energies of Pisces impelled our evolution, galvanized us to develop along the lines of idealism and devotion and the creation of a strong individual. And now we're at the extremes of that when you look at the world and that identification with individuality at all costs is creating conflict, it's creating war. So some of us, with these energies of Aquarius flowing into the world, we're sensing change, And we are embracing the notion of, yes, let's change this world. Others of us are sensing change and feeling fear and trepidation and gripping on to the old ways, afraid of losing the familiar. And basically holding on to outmoded modes of outmoded forms of the past. Everything in our world right now was built on Piscean energy, and that energy is now withdrawn. So what do we do with the institutions that we have in the world built on Piscean energy? Think for a moment. Where have you seen this conflict demonstrated of old forms and new energy coming in the world? It's happening every day. Fortunately, we are not alone in navigating this very perilous time of discord. The second momentous event transpiring right now is the emergence into the modern world of a group of humanity's advanced elders known as the Masters of Wisdom. Some of you, I'm sure most, a lot of you are familiar with the Masters of Wisdom, and I'll go into detail about that event. The third event will be a day where the world will be, and this is going to sound very lofty. The third event will be a day where the world will be unified in an unprecedented simultaneous experience of awakening. And out of this, a global effort will shortly be launched to abolish the scourge of hunger completely from the face of the earth. Now, this awakening that I'm talking about, it'll be a short period, but it will be memorable. It will be global. The elimination of hunger will be accomplished through already existing channels by the redistribution of food, and it will take time. And God willing, as my mother says, it will happen in our lifetimes. It's entirely possible if we bring our will to bear. So just consider this. I'm going to unpack a lot of stuff today. Just consider this as an introduction. And if this information resonates for you, we'll be sharing links online for free book downloads. There'll be videos to watch, lectures by Benjamin Krem online. There's so much you can access to continue your own investigation. So we're going to start with looking at a particular miracle phenomenon that's been widely documented. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on miracle phenomena, but I'll just illustrate how a lot of times people assume that miracles are associated with one particular religion, but you'll see, as I show here, that they're showing up in many different places. So the first one that I will show here, I'm sure you've heard of it. The media always brings out a story of this around the Christian holidays of Christmas and Easter. It's a crowd pleaser. And this is the phenomena of the weeping icon. This is where a religious statue, typically the Virgin Mary, appears to be exuding liquid from the eyes as if to cry. The liquid has been reported variously to be olive oil or fragranced oil, honey or resin. Sometimes it even appears as blood, appears red as if it were, and people associate that as blood. It's been reported for a long time, for a number of decades, but I looked online and, you know, I take it with a grain of salt here, but supposedly in as early as 1643 in Germany, there was a report of a weeping icon, and it not only exuded fluid, but its head apparently moved up and down, and the statue's complexions changed. So a lot of coverage in the news, and not just statues, but paintings can have been seen to have this effect happen. This is in Chicago. A church was going bankrupt, and suddenly the members of the church saw tears streaming from a painting. And this is a painting in Moscow a friend of mine gave me to share. This is high up on the wall. She could see the rivulet of moisture coming from the eyes. Now, it's not just limited to this phenomena is not just limited to Christian tradition. Here is a small statue of Shirdi Sai Baba, and I made an animation, so I didn't use the exact video, but you can see honey dripping from the figure. And in Shirdi Sai Baba is actually regarded as highly revered and regarded as a saint by Hindus and Muslims. And I've seen a lot of these videos online. It's typically honey. They don't use the word weeping with Shirdi Sai Baba. I guess he's not the crying type. But even in, I believe this is a store. I did a screenshot, so you can find these online yourself and take a look. But here is a poster, and you can see this rivulet of honey coming down. If you see the whole video, people have put out trays under these figures and under these posters, and the honey is just filling up. And just as an aside, in the 1990s, there were so many reports of weeping icons in Italy that a consumer agency of the government was called in by a judge to investigate, and the judge asked that statue have an MRI done on it, and they found no mechanism that caused the phenomenon. However, human beings being human beings, there are hoaxes. So that is a reason why apparently the Catholic Church distances itself from weeping icons and just leaves it to the community to investigate. But there's plenty of stories online. There's another phenomenon online of blinking statues. This started to appear maybe 10 years ago, and I was not satisfied with the video that I saw, but I did find another Shirdi Sai Baba video where the tradition is the devotee is washing the statue, and you will see when I go to the next page, it appears as if the statue opens its eyes once the water pours on his head. I'm not sure you can see it so clearly on the screen here in the room, but again, this is, can you see that? It's fairly convincing. If that's a special effect, it's pretty good. And so, let's see, what do we have next? Often we hear about these in the news. In the midst of disaster and destruction, an icon is standing there seemingly unharmed. That was that previous picture was in Turkey, the earthquake in Turkey in February. This is in Texas. This was a house completely burnt down because of the disaster of Hurricane Harvey, but in this in their yard, the lady, Our Lady of Guadalupe, remains standing. This is in Queens, in New York City, Hurricane Sandy, classic photo of the destruction all around, but a figure still standing. And then here's a different religious statue. It is it's not a human, but a deity with an elephant head. It is the Hindu god of Ganesha, remover of obstacles and the god of new beginnings, according to Hindu tradition. This, and I, you can look up this documentary online easily enough. This was a miracle that occurred globally in various temples throughout India and in locations as far away as Queens, New York, in the mid-90s. It took place simultaneously, and the event was to such an extent there was a run on milk in India because everyone was what was happening was they people were going to the temple holding a spoon of milk up to the statue of Ganesh, and it appears as if the milk is vanishing as if the figure is drinking. And this is interesting because some of these phenomena last over, you know, maybe days or weeks, starting and stopping during a period of time. And this phenomenon lasted a good length of time, and it seems to reappear in different cities over time. So now, our next phenomena is very common in Muslim communities. This is where the symbol that represents Allah appears in food and in nature, in a cut of meat, in the shape of the fat of the meat, in the shape of the seeds of an eggplant or tomato, or in the rind of fruit. This actually is the year of a newborn, where they see the symbol. And this is my favorite. I'm a fiber arts person, so I love this sheep. It's quite distinct. There's no mistaking that it is very, very close to the symbol for Allah. That's one common event. So I'm not going to speak too much about these next ones. I'll just put them up on the screen for your own reference. But these have to do with Marian apparitions. And throughout the world, the phenomena of Marian apparitions occurs throughout Asia, Africa, in North America, Europe. So happening all over. You can do your own homework with that. I will mention, let me see which slide it is. Okay, we'll come back to that. I'm going to share a link where, yeah, I don't have that page, but there was a Marian apparition witnessed by the president of Egypt in the 1960s, President Gamal Abdel Nasser. And he witnessed the figure of the Virgin Mary with dozens, if not hundreds of people. And because of that, and because Christians and Muslims were gathering to see this, because in the Muslim tradition, Mary is very revered, he was inspired to improve relations between the Christians and Muslims in Egypt. So that's just a sampling to show how miracles show up in different traditions. First, what we are going to do next, we're going to listen to a recording, and I'm going to turn to my tech support, Mike. He's going to play the first of three recordings where you'll hear someone relating a experience that they believe to be a miracle. There's no religious association with it. It's very surprising and interesting to hear this first story. This is Sabina sharing a story of what happened when she was on her way home from work on a dark, snowy day.
I was working at a little coffee shop, and I was the last one to leave in the evening. It was about midnight, and I stepped out onto the street, and it was deserted, because at that time in 1984 in Edmonton, on a weeknight, the streets would be deserted after about 10 or 11 p.m. And it was snowing, big, heavy, those big, fat, soft snowflakes. So sound doesn't travel. So it was silent. And I stepped out onto the sidewalk. And at that time, the way they had the road set up, there was the sidewalk, then there was a bus lane, then there was a tiny raised curb, and then there was the street part for the cars. So in order to cross the street, I had to first cross the bus lane. I shouldn't have been crossing the street in the middle of the block. I should have gone to the corner. I mean, I was jaywalking, essentially. I'm standing on the sidewalk, and I put one foot into the bus lane that is down, you know, so it's like about 4 inches. And then suddenly somebody or something is pulling me from my jacket, like yanking me back onto the sidewalk, like yanking me up and back onto the sidewalk. And in the next instance, a bus is going by right in front of me, right where I would have been if I hadn't been pulled back. And the bus driver was looking at me and shaking his finger like this. And I was just, what? You know, I was just in a state of, what? I wasn't even scared or shocked or anything, because it all happened so fast and without any warning, because I didn't hear the bus coming and I hadn't turned my head to look either. I knew there was no bus coming from that side, and that was the side I expected it from, because in fact the street was one way going that way, but the bus lane went the other way. I didn't hear the bus, even though it was obviously very close, but I didn't hear it. I didn't hear a thing. The part that's the clearest for me is the moment of stepping down and being pulled back, but I'm pretty sure I turned around to see who did that, and there was nobody there. Not just that there was no one right behind me, there was not even anyone like running away, in either direction. There was just nobody. And I think on some level, I just kind of discounted it and I carried on and went home and I didn't think about it anymore, which now seems kind of crazy to me. But the thing is, the memory came back to me. And that's the other part that I find astonishing is that I didn't maintain that memory. It didn't continue to live with me as like one of my memories. So it wasn't until 15 years later, I was living in Norway. I knew of this woman in Colorado who had created a website for miracles. She wanted people to write in about miracles they'd experienced. So I was reading one of the stories, and I think it was her own, in fact. And so she described riding her horse along the edge of a kind of cliff. And they're riding quite close to the edge. And then suddenly the horse slips and starts to fall off the edge. And so she's thinking, this is it, we're going down. And suddenly the horse righted itself and was back up on top. When I read the part about how suddenly they were righted, but it was not physically possible, I had this flash and I suddenly remembered that moment on the street. Like it all came back and I was reliving it. And then I realized, oh, that was the same kind of thing. That's basically impossible. And it saved my life.
Over the years, I've heard dozens, if not hundreds, of stories, variations of what you just heard from my friend Sabina. And they've taken place all over the world. And we're going to hear two more similar stories in this presentation. I'm convinced there are thousands more stories out there from others that have perhaps kept it a secret or just kept the experience to themselves because they did not realize how prevalent these encounters are. So part of my purpose in talking about miracle encounters is to generate more conversations and awareness about a phenomena that, based on a larger picture, can only be increasing. The first time that I came to know about these stories was through the work of the esoteric author and lecturer, Benjamin Krem. He was the founder and editor-in-chief of Share International magazine, a monthly outlet which to this day presents an analysis of events and trends in the world that relate to the spiritual principles of sharing and cooperation. A unique feature of the magazine, is the section where there are highlighted stories of miracle encounters written in, sent in by readers, very similar to what we just listened to. There are likely upwards of multiple hundreds of stories that have been published since the early 1990s, and there are
I was
likely,
in a coffee
I
shop.
know there are stories that have not yet been published. As the foremost chronicler of the most timely and relevant esoteric perspectives, Mr. Krem published 18 titles and traveled the world as an international lecturer, working actively up to his passing in 2016. He accomplished all of this, some 40 plus years of work, making known the presence of a group known as the Masters of Wisdom, who are emerging into our world. Without he didn't require any pay for this. It was an absolute dedicated labor of love, and his influence was pretty broad. He was interviewed on television and radio in multiple countries. For those of you who are old enough, he was on the Merv Griffin show with Gore Vidal, and he put Gore Vidal in his place. So one day I'll find that video and we'll have another meeting and I'll show that because it's pretty nifty. In Mr. Krem's work, he always acknowledged the great exponents of the ageless wisdom teaching who came before him. Specifically, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, founder of the Theosophical Society in New York City in 1875, whose magnum opus is The Secret Doctrine. And you can see there Alice A. Bailey, who published two dozen volumes in 30 years. as the amanuensis of one of the masters of wisdom. Helena Rorick, the publisher of the Agni Yoga series, is also one of the great predecessors. All four of these great teachers represent phases in the historic release to the broader public of teachings that for eons were largely concealed within the Eastern traditions. So when we examine the postulates of the ageless wisdom teaching, it becomes clear that miracles are simply occurrences based on a reality that our science has yet to acknowledge. And this is where I start to show some diagrams. I love diagrams. I hope it makes it easier to understand what I'm sharing. We're going to talk about the seven planes of matter, where traditional science is established on three phases of matter, solid, liquid, and gas. Esoteric science recognizes four additional levels that are finer than gas, and they're called the etheric planes. Our planet is contained within an invisible etheric envelope, an ocean of energies. Just as an aside, the Great Pyramid of Giza was supposedly built to draw energy from the etheric planes. We have an etheric counterpart that is an exact replica to our dense physical body. The etheric body is invisible to most people, though some very skilled healers often are able to see that form. The quality of the flow of energies through this etheric counterpart reflects in the quality of health in our physical body. Now, so if there's a domain on our planet that is potent and active and impacts us at our dense physical level, yet is invisible, that gives us some wiggle room to acknowledge the unexplainable phenomenon of miracles. But what about the apparent deliberateness or intentionality of certain miracle occurrences? So here's where an understanding of the ageless wisdom perspective on the evolution of consciousness might help us. And we have another diagram. What I'll illustrate here is, in this diagram in a simple way, is the relationship between planes of consciousness which exist throughout the cosmos. So atoms, minerals, plant, animal, and human kingdoms, these exist throughout the cosmos, not just on our planet. Each plane of consciousness has evolved out of the expansion of the consciousness below it. Therefore, and that's really the focus of the ageless wisdom teachings. It's the evolution of consciousness rather than the evolution of matter. As atomic matter expanded in consciousness, the mineral kingdom emerged. Out of the mineral kingdom evolved the plant kingdom. The animal kingdom is the outcome of the expansion of consciousness at the plant level. But of course, those are limited kinds of consciousness, but consciousness nonetheless. Now, the human kingdom did emerge out of the animal kingdom. The animal kingdom, the physical evolution of the animal kingdom lent itself to vehicles for humans, but humans are uniquely the union of spirit and matter. Unlike the forms before us, we evolved into self-consciousness, the awareness that we are aware, evolved into agency and free will. The ageless wisdom indicates that consciousness entered into the human form 18 million years ago. Out of the human kingdom emerged great advanced beings that now form the spiritual kingdom. And this expansion of consciousness continues to the level of planets, to solar systems, and to galaxies. Our planet is a unit of consciousness on its own path of evolution. So these planes of existence don't just evolve automatically. They evolve as a result of the downflow of spiritual stimulus from the greater consciousness above it. In response, the consciousness below expands and advances upward. So this occurs again throughout the cosmos. In his first book, The Reappearance of the Christ, Benjamin Krem said, "It is an occult fact that all life streams on this planet are on the way to being human or on the way out of being human, have been human or gone beyond human. The human stage is the central stage, which all lower stages go on to on the way to the higher." So speaking of human, let's reel this back a bit. It's a bit abstract. What is a human? Let's talk about you. The ageless wisdom says that you are a spark of God, a spark of divinity. And that spark is drawn to this dense physical world, but it cannot manifest without a vehicle. So that spark, or monad, as the theosophist recognizes, manifests through the vehicle of the soul. And that soul incarnates into the individual threefold human being that you are. Threefold meaning that you are expressing through physical form, through an astral emotional body, and through a mental body. Through the law of reincarnation, that spark of God returns again and again to bring more light to matter, to enlighten matter at the atomic level. That's literally our purpose in incarnating at the dense physical plane. We are, each of us, spiritualizing matter. Incarnation after incarnation, we return again and again until one day, we are completely harmless. Harmless in thought, harmless in speech, and harmless in action. At that point, we have achieved perfection. We've achieved mastery over the dense physical life. We no longer have to incarnate life after life. And with this achievement, we have entered into the ranks of the spiritual kingdom, into the group of masters of wisdom. So each and every one of us will eventually find ourselves to be a master. Once you have achieved mastery over the physical plane, you eventually have the opportunity to continue your journey of evolution on another planet, or perhaps even another solar system. Vast possibilities become available to a master. Typically, masters have gone on to Venus. Venus is kind of a sister planet to us. Or you may choose to stay in the Earth realm to be of service to those on the path after you. There is a group that have chosen to stay with Earth humanity. And that act one can see that as definitely a gesture. I wouldn't use the term gesture, but it is definitely selfless service to remain here when you have other opportunities beyond this planet. That group that has chosen to remain with Earth humanity is the group of masters of wisdom who have worked behind the scenes guiding the evolution of consciousness on our planet, epic after epic. Now, we're going to play the second recording, but I do want to explain a little bit more about the masters of wisdom and their direct relationship with us. And this brings us to my final diagram. Yes, so this will explain the second of the three momentous events that are unfolding today. So here we see the human kingdom, humanity, the kingdoms below us. There's now a group, disciples and initiates, that come between humanity and masters of wisdom in this diagram. Again, spiritual stimulus flows from the higher consciousness above to the lesser consciousness, and the evolution of consciousness expands and moves upwards. Who are the disciples and the initiates? These are the advanced thinkers, the great minds throughout history, the foremost scientists, philosophers, statesmen, artists, writers, poets, educators, anthropologists, economists, academics, religious leaders of any age, whose impact on the world is far-reaching, who are able to intuit consciously or subconsciously the ideas placed in the mind belt of humanity by the masters of wisdom. Those ideas are shaped into ideals and introduced to the world through the pioneering work of these great thinkers. It's the acceptance or the rejection by humanity of those ideals which advance our progress or even hold us back. And the outcome of that shapes every civilization. This constitutes humanity's journey of evolution. So those ideas coming from the masters of wisdom placed in the mind belt of humanity, this is known as the great plan for humanity. This is essentially an intention held in the consciousness of the great intelligence that ensouls our planet. And this is the being which many vaguely sense as God or Allah. The masters of the wisdom associated with our human evolution total 63. And for the past 500 years, the masters have known that the time would come for them to emerge into the world to work directly with us. This is Mark from the Netherlands.
Was very early in the morning. I'm not a morning
Sounds
person
good.
whatsoever, so I was not paying attention because I was putting my bike. I had to wait because the traffic was coming through the cars. But I put my bike somehow where the cars were driving. I was not paying attention. So it was in the year 2000, and I was hit by a car. I was hit by that car. And the millisecond I was hit, it's just amazing. I was put into this cocoon of love and peacefulness, which is indescribable. And at that moment, I felt a great force was protecting me from harm. I knew from that millisecond that the car hit me because eyewitnesses told me that I was thrown over the car. It was a big hit. I was hanging in the air. I was completely at peace in that millisecond. Completely at peace, like a womb, a protective womb was surrounding me. And then, boom, I hit the ground. I was completely relaxed, not shaken by anything. My bike was totally destroyed. There was a big crash on the ground. Nothing happened to me. I got my bike out of the way, went to the lady. I said, I'm very sorry that I caused you so much trouble. But I was so relaxed about it. And then I thought to myself, some consciousness, some protective consciousness made sure that I was not majorly hurt. So I wrote a story to share international magazine. And I was told that at that moment, the master who's called Jesus was apparently capable of helping me out. I knew intuitively that very big force enveloped me. And these are just things that keep on happening.
Okay. So that story, what Mark mentioned, I want to explain something that he mentioned in his story. He mentioned writing the story into Share International, and I mentioned how those miracle stories are being published in the magazine. But he also mentioned something about the Master Jesus, and I want to explain that. The masters of wisdom that are associated with our human evolution, they total 63. For, as I said earlier, for the past 500 years, they've known that part of their work is to emerge into full public life with humanity to work directly with us. And as it turns out, this process of emergence is taking place at least 1,200 years sooner than they expected because humanity has evolved quite rapidly to the point of readiness to receive the guidance of the masters, irrespective of what we see happening in the world. On the inner planes, this has taken place. And The masters are emerging also because it was out of the pain and the terror and the anguish of the great wars, World War I and World War II, that a great cry arose out of humanity. And to this, the masters have responded, and they are in the world today. They're fully aware of the discord the world is undergoing because of the transition out of the Piscean Age into the Aquarian Age. And they are here to work to diminish the cleavage and division that is inevitable when there is a clash of energies. And they are here to help smooth the way forward into the new time. According to Benjamin Krem, never before in the known history of man have the masters walked openly among us. So the reference to, in the published stories in Share International, Benjamin Krem, being in telepathic rapport with one of the masters of wisdom, was able to provide insights that he would not ordinarily have about these miracle encounters. And it was seen that there are three masters responsible and involved in a lot of the miracle encounters. The first master was the master who lived as Mary, the mother of Jesus. The second master was the one who lived as the incarnation of Jesus. And then the third master is the most important one to this entire story. He is the eldest member of the human family. He is regarded with great reverence by the members of the spiritual kingdom, these spiritual titans that we call masters of wisdom, lords of compassion. They see this master as their esteemed leader, their teacher. His evolutionary advancement was so rapid because he never made the same mistake twice. This master has already inspired world leaders and ordinary people alike, appearing to people as a humble, ordinary person. And you're going to see photographs of how this master has appeared to people. A humble, ordinary person, yet radiating a spiritual potency and wisdom that cannot be easily forgotten. So we're going to hear a third miracle encounter in a moment that represents the poetry of how this master has appeared to people so beautifully. So you don't want to leave without hearing it. The personal name of this master is Maitreya, which means the joyful one. Maitreya is a name familiar to Buddhists, but he is not here to establish a religion or to gain followers. He is here to focus the diverse aspirations of an entire world towards the establishment of sharing and justice as the foundation of all life. And it is a esoteric fact that Maitreya, the familiar Buddhist name, is also known as Maitreya the Christ. And in esoteric terms, Christ means a position, in the same way that president means a position. So Maitreya the Christ is the one. Maitreya sits at the head of the group of masters of wisdom, and he is regarded as the Christ. That's the esoteric term, Christ. Maitreya has said, "My plan is to show you that the way out of your problems is to listen again to the true voice of God within your hearts, to share the produce of this most bountiful of worlds among your brothers and sisters everywhere." Maitreya is here for people of all religions and those who have no religion. At the same time, he fulfills the expectations of the world's religions for the return of a great teacher. Christians await the Christ. Jews expect the Messiah. Buddhists anticipate the return of the Maitreya Buddha. Hindus look to Krishna, and Muslims foresee the return of the Imam Mahdi. And many indigenous traditions have in their traditional stories, they are expecting the return of a teacher. Maitreya's priorities are the just I'm not sharing my screen. Let me share my screen just to give us more illustration here. Maitreya's priorities are the just redistribution of food for all, proper housing for all, access to medical care and to education. These priorities are expressed in Articles 25 and 26 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and proclaimed by the United Nations General Assembly 75 years ago, nearly to the date. It's worth noting that if we were to abolish hunger tomorrow, it is said there would be a remarkable cessation of tensions worldwide, unlike anything the world has ever experienced. Maitreya's spiritual potency is demonstrated by his capacity to be the embodiment of the love of God. He doesn't channel love. He is love. The Buddha demonstrates the wisdom of God, and Maitreya demonstrates the love of God. And this event of a stepping forward by a great teacher follows a cyclical process that has taken place throughout human history, specifically during the transition between two great ages. We know these figures as Hercules, Hermes, Rama, Mithra, Vyasa, Confucius, Zoroaster, Krishna, Shankaracharya, Gautama, Jesus, and Muhammad. But unlike the emergence of these past great teachers, what is unprecedented today is that Maitreya is stepping forward not alone, but with a group, with the masters of wisdom. And there are 14 masters in the world today working actively. They are involved in every department of human endeavor. They are working with economists. They are working with scientists. They are working with educators. They are working with statespeople. They are influencing events as we speak. Maitreya's hand is behind so many of the miracles we read about. And especially in times of disaster, Maitreya and the masters are the first of the first responders, often enveloping people in a protective cocoon, much like what Mark described earlier, so that fear and terror are absent from the event. When people say they have had an experience of an angel, it is typically Maitreya who has appeared to them. The conditions in the world would be far worse without the presence of Maitreya and the masters today. And according to Benjamin Krem, their presence in the world ensures we will not see World War III nor a nuclear war. Just some interesting details about Maitreya to give you a picture of what a master is. Maitreya works 24 hours a day. He doesn't require sleep nor food, but you'll see him socially eating, apparently. He entered into the modern world of London, England, from his ancient retreat in the Himalayas, arriving via airplane on July 1977, fulfilling the biblical prophecy of the arrival of the Christ returning in the clouds. He used his own passport, which listed his profession as teacher. His body is comprised of pure light, so he can appear to us in various human guises. So I will show to you different photographs of how Maitreya and the Master Jesus have appeared in these different guises as men, as woman, as mother, as child, around the world. And each of these images have an extraordinary story. If you want to know a little bit more about it, I can answer during the Q&A. Often Maitreya appears as someone who seems unhoused, who looks unhoused. And other times he appears at marches, encouraging the demonstrators. And I actually videotaped the person that Benjamin Krem confirmed was Maitreya at the New York City Public Library. This was video that I shot 20 years ago. This is the simplicity of Maitreya. He's playing a flute, which is, I noticed, was handmade. It's made from the broken off handle of a tricycle. And Krishna is often being depicted with blue or black skin, carrying or playing a flute. And I knew that was the gesture, the hint that Maitreya was offering.
For more background information, visit www.shareinternational-west.org.